Today is September 10th, 2014. This is episode number 271 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin. Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey master. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com. And if you'd like to, it's actually /ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
We need to buy you a better drum set.
Yes, my drum set is comprised of a wooden slab of particle board.
And fingers.
And fingers, yeah. But Greg... Right, is it Greg? Am I doing that wrong? It's Ian. Greg, Ian. Yeah, the names are so close. But Ian Lewis, that would be at Ian L Photography, came through with my call to action for titles, and that's what he came up with. Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey master. Thank you, Ian. Or Ian, Greg, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you rock. And the great thing is, we are always so professional. We have the names ready to go.
I know. We are always prepared. We are prepared.
We're like Boy Scouts. Actually, no, we are so not like Boy Scouts.
I know. We're more like brownies, I think.
Can we wear the little sash thing?
Yeah, well, I do. I thought we had to, really. So, busy day, right? No, busy week. Yesterday, busy. It was stuff. Apple
stuff. I'm sorry. I'm still stuck on the image of you wearing the sash, and my imagination is so very wrong on so many levels. Let's just leave it at that.
Well, and, where else am I going to put my badges? Well,
you know what? That's a really good point.
Duh.
Yeah.
Duh. So Apple did this thing yesterday.
Right.
He says to get this Titanic on course.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? How about if I start by saying, wow, the video stream was a disaster from beginning to end.
Oh, man. It was almost, if it wasn't so frustrating, it would have been funny how bad it was.
Yeah.
So we had, at the beginning, we had dual audio streams. So you hear
about half an hour.
Yeah, there was really like 20 minutes, somewhere between 20 and 30 minutes. There was music being piped to us, but then we also heard there was a microphone in the theater, so we were getting the music that was being piped to them, which was not the same. As the talking, the hubbub.
Right. Yeah. It was quite a mashup for the music.
Yeah, it was quite a matchup. So that was incredible. It was hard to listen to. It was hard to hear. But you didn't want to necessarily turn it down because then you might miss the beginning of it. And at least for me, because I was still working and multitasking and stuff, waiting for it to start. And then it starts, and we get the Chinese translator.
Yeah, along with Tim Cook.
Along with Tim Cook, and. So you like, for me, like I would want to turn Tim up, but because I can't hear him because the Chinese translator is talking, but it turns out that when I turned Tim up, I also turned her up. So, wasn't helping. And then it would drop.
Yeah. The video would drop. The audio would drop. It would freeze.
Sometimes it would go back. It would might go back 3 minutes, which I don't even know how they would do that. And then sometimes my favorite moment was about 45 minutes to an hour into it, and the stream cuts back to the pre-show, the pre-event people filing in.
Yes, I experienced the very same thing.
And then it would drop to the test pattern with the schedule.
Yeah, which was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, and it was very, very difficult. So, we're trying to, it turns out it was actually good for our live coverage in that it wasn't working for anybody else either.
Right. So I'm especially glad we had Dave in the room, because he was not only our eyes and ears, but the eyes and ears of a lot of other people that couldn't watch the stream.
Yeah, two things. Our stream stays up because we actually have the infrastructure set up to handle an enormous amount of traffic.
Maybe Apple should talk to us.
Maybe Apple should talk to us. We have, you know, our streams always, our live coverage always stays up, no matter how much we're getting hammered. And that's not the case even for sites that do a lot more traffic than we do. On the normal course of business, their live coverage, their sites will crash under the load, and ours, you know, people pour into ours and ours stays up. So anyway, there's that. So yay us. But unyay us. Unyay us. That's a technical term. Don't try that at home.
Oh, I thought it was that new age artist from Bulimia.
Unyay us. Dave's connection, the Wi-Fi connection in the Flint Center, couldn't handle all the journalists that were there doing their thing. Couldn't handle, you know. So we actually, Dave was having trouble getting out. And so our live coverage ended up being like a hodgepodge between what Dave was able to get out, including photographs and stuff, and then what we were able to see from the video. And but you know, it worked, and people were tense. Twitter melted. It's like Twitter went up in this puff of digital smoke.
Yeah, just zeros and ones flying into the sky.
People were like, "This is terrible." It was kind of.
It was almost comical.
It was at the time. It was nothing but frustrating. In retrospect, it becomes slightly comical.
Yes. Yeah. At the time, it's a good thing that we were not live broadcasting, because I would have said, or people would have heard me say more than one thing that would have probably embarrassed them or me.
Yes. Yes, that is exactly true. But nonetheless, so you know, we're able to get through it. We're able to see some of the videos and stuff after the fact. And Apple has a ton of information on that site, on the iPhone, the Apple Watch. And I've been doing that. It's gonna take an enormous amount of training and effort and corrections.
This is like when the new year rolls around. And people write the wrong date on things for the first 3 months.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. By the time you get used to it, it's another year. And So why don't we? Let's jump into it. It's not really even jumping into it because we've been dilly dallying. But let's
talk about the iPhone 6. Let's wait into it. Okay. iPhone 6, no surprise. 4.7 inch screen version and 5.5 inch screen version. Higher resolution than we have on the iPhone 5S.
The leaks were accurate. The leaked cases and prototypes, supposedly, and mock-ups were accurate.
Yep. 8 megapixel camera with an improved sensor, so that's kind of cool. Although it does stick off the back, just like the photo showed.
Uh-huh. I honestly hadn't noticed that yet.
Yeah. Okay. If you want to notice something that'll really kind of bug you about it, go to Apple's webpage for the iPhone.
Yeah. That's apple.com/iPhone.
Uh-huh. And look at the photograph they have of the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus on Edge.
Yep.
There's
getting to it. Maybe. No. I want to compare. I don't want to go to compare. I want you to go to slash iPhone. Do you happen to know what page that's on?
It was on the main page. So I'm assuming it's apple.com/iPhone.
Yeah, it took it down. Or it's not there now, at least.
Okay. So one of the graphics, it shows the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus, which is the 5.5 inch version, on Edge. And the little lip for the camera lens isn't there.
They're cheating?
They totally cheated in the photograph.
Oh, okay. But it's actually apple.com/iPhone-6 for anyone who's
at home. Okay. Yeah.
So
they made it look thinner by chopping that lens bezel off.
That, I don't care for that.
I thought that was a pretty crappy thing. I noticed that just a little while ago.
I don't care for that. All right, but I do care for the devices. They're solid looking. No sapphire.
Right. So that was a big surprise.
I think both of us got that wrong, right?
Yes, we both got that wrong. I was certain we were going to see Sapphire on both models.
I was too.
And it's not on either.
I was too, but it is a new, they're doing something new with glass.
Yeah, it's called Ion Glass. So I'm assuming that means it's super strong unless you get it in your kryptonite or something.
Right. Right. Because if you get it in your kryptonite, it'll just fall apart.
Yes.
That's what we heard.
Yeah. It was on the internet, so it must be true.
It must be. Yeah, exactly. It must be true. Plus, I think I heard it on a podcast. Now, okay, you know, it's interesting. I'm looking at... Are you talking about the two? So the two images where they're side by side, but they're horizontal, and you see just the sort of top end of it.
Right. Yeah. You see like the rockers for the volume.
Yeah. So it's taken out there, but it's not taken out
right for the, below. There's
an right below. Right.
Uh huh.
Of course, that's not edge on.
Yeah, it's looking across the back at a very oblique angle.
One quarter, not three quarters, but like one quarter.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So, I saw that and I did a double take because as I'm scrolling through, I see those, the horizontal on edge images. And I'm like, okay, yeah, those are like really thin. Mm-hmm. And then I scroll down and I'm seeing, okay, and there's the bezel and it's rounder than it looked in some of the mock-ups we saw. And then I realize I didn't see it up above. It's not there. So I thought that was kind of a crappy cheat on Apple's part. It's not like it would make it look any thicker, really, in those shots.
Yeah, no, that is also not going to be a problem.
Right. And both of these iPhones are thinner than the iPhone 5S.
Right.
So, yeah, it's already really thin. They didn't need to cheat like that in those photos.
No, I agree with that. But the devices look good. They're pretty much everything everyone was expecting. The iPhone 6 Plus has the better battery life. You got the optical image stabilization as opposed to just image stabilization. So the lens mount moves like sideways, right? In addition to in and out.
Right, and that's in the iPhone 6 Plus.
Only the iPhone 6 Plus.
Right.
So it's longer battery life.
Yes.
They're otherwise similar.
Yes.
They're otherwise identical.
They have different screen resolutions, but they also have
Of course. Yeah, of course they have screens.
But they have they both have NFC.
They do both have NFC. We had a moment of panic where we're looking at that chart. And the way Apple has its compare chart laid out, anyway, it was kind of confusing. I really actually hope they fixed that, but it made it look like the Verizon. It made it look at first blush, mind you, it made it look like the Verizon and T-Mobile iPhones didn't have NFC.
Right. Yeah. Where it should have said NFC or yes or whatever, it had dashes.
It had dashes, but it turns out the list of carriers that was above that section of the chart was just that. It was a list. It's not a column heading.
So, right, the way it's laid out, it looked like column headings.
Right. The way it's laid out, it looks like column headings. It's just, I think it was a little bit sloppy on Apple's part. But, of course, all the iPhone 6 and 6 Pluses, all of them have NFC, as does the iWatch, but we'll be getting to the iWatch.
Right, and that NFC is for mobile payments, and there you go. So my whole belief that first NFC wouldn't be there, and that if it was, it would not be for mobile payments. Well, guess what?
Yeah, but you know, I think we all knew you were going to be wrong with that one.
I know. Well, my assumption is that because I was saying no, this isn't going to happen. That they chose to put the feature in just to spite me.
Yeah. Yeah, that... Because the world...
Because that's revolves. What Apple does.
Yeah, the world revolves around
you. Yes, the world does revolve.
Yes, around you.
Well, occasionally. So, I'm curious to see, though, how this NFC thing plays out. Because... in the United States, using smart card type payments and NFC in smartphones to make payments really hasn't caught on. So I'm wondering if with Apple doing this now, is this when it finally takes off?
Yeah, it will. Period. It will. It absolutely will. This Apple support, you know, this, so, all right, to get this on the record, because I don't think we mentioned this on the show. You and I were both at the point where, or maybe we did say this on last week's show, where we didn't think NFC was coming. Was that last week's show?
It was probably the week before, because by the time last week rolled around, I think we were both resigning ourselves to the fact that NFC was going to be there, and that and that we may be disappointed in how it's used.
Right, but so Apple is using it for this payment system. It's called Apple Pay. I think that's going to end up being a pretty big deal financially. It really depends, and I also think that Wall Street is going to be kind of slow, as it has so far been slow, to wrap its head around the potential for Apple Pay.
Yeah. When I look at Apple Pay, the big thing that I see isn't that Apple added NFC, because it's not like this is a new technology. The big thing is the way Apple is implementing the security to ensure that the transactions are as safe and fraud proof as they possibly can be.
So Apple's doing a one-time encryption thing, just like there was a rumor to that just last week, just ahead of the announcement. Apple's doing a one-time encryption thing, which limits the opportunity for any it dramatically limits the opportunity for anyone who's able to somehow intercept the NFC signal to decrypt it.
Close.
But yes. Yeah. I'm not going to say it's impossible, because A, I'm not a security expert, and B, I don't really know what I'm talking about, but it should be close to impossible to intercept it. And then, because it's a one-time exchange, it would be almost even more almost impossible to decrypt it. So that's a good thing. Plus, the retail people who are handling the transaction don't see your credit card. They don't see your CVV.
Yeah, the security code that's on the back of your credit card.
Right. Yeah, they don't see it. They don't even see your name that's on the credit card.
Right.
And so, I mean, this is just, it's tighter control. Of course, the almost all retail people are honest folks who are doing a good job, right? But this limits the potential for those who are actually bad and who are actually interested in easily stealing your identity by snaking information off your card. This limits their opportunity to do so. This is going to limit fraud, and that's going to end up making the credit card companies money. And my take is that that's going to help Apple make money. If Apple can get a little tiny piece of every transaction that's being done with Apple Pay, which I'm assuming that Apple will, either from the merchant side or from the credit card companies,
yeah,
one of the two, it's going to be adding up to significant money for Apple.
Right. And it's not like keeping your credit card number and your name and all that information away from salespeople hasn't been possible if you're using NFC, say, on an Android phone. But the way Apple is securing the information, that's what I think really sets this apart.
Yeah. And Apple's unified ecosystem, it's gonna take off because Apple's doing it.
Yeah. I think that the likelihood it will take off is much higher now that Apple is in the game.
I don't even think it's an issue. This is going to be successful. It's going to work.
I have a little bit of reservation, but that's only because I have seen how resistant people have been to using NFC for transactions in this country. And a lot of that comes from the store employees who actively tell people don't use it.
Yeah. All right. So I'm saying it's going to happen and you're saying it's not going to happen. So who do you think is going to be right?
Well, I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I'm saying I'm questioning how successful it will be. It's definitely going to happen.
It's going to
be
huge.
And with Apple in this game now, the likelihood it will really take off is much higher. I'm just not going to hold my breath for that to happen right away. And of course, if I start holding my breath now, my lips will be blue before it launches anyhow, because we don't get Apple Pay until October.
It's October. So I'm not going to hold my breath either, but I'm at 100%. It's going to be a big success. This is the thing. Apple support, I said this 3 years ago, that the thing holding NFC back was the lack of Apple support.
Oh, and I agree. Lack of Apple support has been a huge stumbling block for NFC.
Yeah. So now it's there, and now it's going to happen.
Now it's there, and I think it's likely to happen. I'm not quite as confident on this one as you are, but I think we're heading down the right path for NFC to finally become mainstream in the United States.
All right. So let's talk about the iPhone and the choice that people were just immediately. I was getting texts in the middle of the keynote presentation with, so what do you think? I'm busy.
So was I.
So was Dave. Yes. So Dave was getting texts from people who should have known better. Anyway, we won't get into that.
I'm glad that everyone that was texting me was a good sport and understood why I didn't respond to them for hours.
Fair enough. So let's talk about this question. Let's talk about this question of which one should I get? Because that's what people were just instantaneously asking themselves and us and everybody else. Which one should I get?
Yes. And Dave got to play with both. And his choice came down to not size, but features.
But actually features related to size.
The size played into it in that the features that really swayed him only come with the iPhone 6 Plus, meaning the optical image stabilization, the substantially longer battery life.
Dave's my buddy. I love him. Been business partners for a long time. And he cited the optical image stabilization as a big thing, but Dave is not. My guess is that that's not going to end up being a thing he cares that much about in the long run. But he did cite it at the time.
Sure.
So fine. So let's
the bigger let's or the longer battery life. That's something that I can see as a big benefit for Dave.
Sure. Yeah, a lot of people will really enjoy the longer battery life. I actually think that the question of which one I should get comes down to your individual use case scenario.
Yes. If you're looking at this as a device to replace your iPad mini and work as a phone, then the 6 Plus makes a lot more sense.
It really does. If, you know, Dave said that it fit in his pocket. Now, he said that. I don't think he sat down with it in his pocket. Could be wrong.
I'm assuming he couldn't. That's a big phone.
It is a big phone. But he did say that it fit in his pockets. He also said it fit in the other men who were there, fit in their pockets. Now, most of the journalists on hand, at least surrounding Dave, happened to be men. Dave's observation, and he's probably right on this, is that very few women's pants pockets would accommodate the iPhone 6 Plus. And that's probably true. But he also said that he didn't think it would fit in his pocket with a case.
And for a lot of people, that's a big deal.
That is going to be a big deal. But there's another usage case. So like one of the things that Dave is writing about this, and we'll have the link in the show notes, right?
Of course we will.
He talked about how much he loves his iPad Mini with Retina display, and how he carries it with him. or how much he uses it. And he said that he could see going from two devices, which is currently the iPad mini with Retina display plus his iPhone 5S, and going down to just one device, which would be the iPhone 6 Plus for him, and that was a compelling reason for him to do so. I'm the side of that same coin. I'm not the opposite side of that coin. I'm the side of that same coin. I am so comfortable with my iPad Air, and before that, the iPad 3, which is obviously a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. I am so comfortable with my iPad Air, I'm not interested in ditching it.
I totally get that.
Yeah. I read so many books, and I am so comfortable with that form factor when it comes to reading. And I am so comfortable with playing. And I could probably be a little bit more comfortable. I could probably also be comfortable with either the Mini or the iPhone 6 Plus. But the reality is that I like the large form factor of iPad, and I'm comfortable carrying it with me all of the times. It's always with me. And because of that, I would rather have an iPhone that fits in my pocket.
Yep, I totally get that.
So for me, I will be comfortable sticking with the iPhone 5S until next year, and not that I have a choice. But I would probably get the smaller of the two devices a year from now.
And when I look at both the devices, the true deciding factor for me is size, and the 5.5 is just simply too big for me. So
plus it's a phablet.
You did that on purpose.
Oh yeah, very much so. Dave wrote it too. I did not add it, but if Dave had not included the word in his look, I would have.
Yeah, when I read that in his piece, it's a good thing I wasn't broadcasting live. Man, yeah. I hate that word. Oh.
So our point here is that these are like very me looks at this. But that's just the thing. Anyone's decision on this is going to have to be a me thing. Because it's the way you use your devices that matter. Yes. If small enough to put in your pocket is important, you're probably going to want to go with the 6. If you are a person who carries a purse all the time, and you don't care about that, maybe the 6 Plus would be better for you.
Sure.
One thing that Apple is so clever, and I can't imagine that that Google won't borrow this feature. They should certainly borrow it. But there's the reachability feature that Apple came up with.
Yes, and that was the feature that made me think, okay, going with a screen size bigger than the 4-inch on the iPhone 5S is plausible now for me. And I can barely reach the edges of the screen or the top of the screen on my 5S one-handed. And for me, a smartphone has to be a one-handed device. That's
right.
That's it.
And that's the case for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You're definitely not alone in that. And that's actually the thing. See, that was so clever. Do you remember how Phil Schiller explained to us that one-handed is, you know, being able to operate it with one hand is why Apple kept the screen size at 4 inches?
Yes.
And I was really wondering how they were going to spend that. I was kind of expecting either to ignore that or to come up with a now we can do it better kind of thing. You know, that's Apple's usual way. They denigrate it until they're ready to do it, and then they say, we solved the problems. And this is one of those examples where Apple solved the problem.
And they actually did solve the problem.
And they absolutely solved the problem brilliantly. Dave said it's fantastic. And what's interesting, so what reachability does is it takes your screen, your icons, and it scrunches them down to, like on the iPhone 6, it's about the halfway point on the screen, so that you can access them all with one hand, right? And with the iPhone 6 Plus, it doesn't squeeze them down to half the size. It actually squeezes them down to the same point that is the halfway point on the iPhone 6.
Right. Which makes sense, because it's not like you suddenly have longer fingers.
Yeah,
you because still you need bought to be a bigger phone.
Right. Which is, it's just, that's, as Dave put it in his piece, that's just one of those little things. It's one of those little things that Apple thinks about.
But it's also a huge thing.
And it, and it, right, right. And it becomes a huge part of the usability thing. So Apple solved the one-handed thing on the big screen, which was always my, I don't really know that I'm going to want a bigger device anyway, because I really do like using them one-handed. And Apple has made that a non-issue.
Which I think is absolutely brilliant.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It actually, yeah, it's brilliant, and it's solid, and I think that it's going to make the iPhone 6. These are just some of the things that are going to contribute to the iPhone 6 and the 6 Plus both being the best-selling iPhones of all time, and I think that Apple's going to have a banner fiscal year in front of it.
I think you're totally right. I think Apple's going to have a hard time keeping inventory in stock, and not because they're having production issues, but because it's physically impossible to make them as fast as people buy them.
Yes, but at the same time, I personally have no doubt that the December quarter is going to be a record quarter, and this could end up even turning into a record September quarter if Apple is on the ball as much as I think it is.
I think you're right. Yeah,
we will certainly see. So that's the iPhone. Now, one of the things I like to do on my iPhone is the Twitter tweets.
Oh, I've heard about that thing, the Twitter tweet things. Yeah,
Twitter tweets, and that's where people the whistle.
Oh, that explains the awkward looks I get when I'm clapping instead.
I'm kidding, of course, but we did want to let you know that that we're on Twitter. I'm at TM O'Brien. That's Brian with a Y.
And I'm Jay Gamut. That's Jay Gamut with a J.
And we'd love it if you'd follow us. And if you have something to say, feel free to shoot us a tweet. We see every at mention that comes our way, and we reply to almost all of them.
That's true. Because almost. We have no life, and we love you.
Yeah. And the ones that we don't tend to simply, we're not ignoring anyone. We love it. We love it when you tweet us, so tweet us, and we appreciate it. So then there's the big topic, the topic that I'm probably the most excited about.
Yes, that would be iWatch.
What is it?
Oh, I did it. Oh, my
you
God,
did it.
I just did it.
It has been so hard. It's called Apple Watch.
Oh.
I keep typing iWatch. I uploaded a whole bunch of... So I edited Dave's... two hands-on pieces today and added photographs for him and everything. And I named them all. I put iWatch in the name and uploaded them to the server. Didn't even think about it.
Wow. Well, and I remember checking one of your pieces last night before it ran. And you were so good saying Apple Watch all the way through until the very last paragraph.
It's true. But that was only because I caught the rest of them. I did it. Well, I did it when I was writing. I kept writing. Anyway, the point is, it's called Apple Watch. It's not called iWatch.
You know what you need to do? You need to set up a text expander snippet so when you type iWatch, it expands to Apple Watch.
Yeah. Oh. That is such a good idea.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to do that. Yeah. The Apple Watch is a thing. It turns out it's a real thing.
Yes, and I wish they could have told us more. And I understand why they couldn't. It's because it's not fully baked yet. It doesn't come out till next year. But there was a lot that they just couldn't tell us yet. That I really want to know about related to the health and fitness features that it has.
Yeah, we didn't see anything. You know, there's actually, we didn't see much on HealthKit, and we heard nothing and saw nothing on HomeKit.
Right. And I was surprised on both counts.
Yeah, especially since iOS 8 gets released on, what is it,
the 17th, Wednesday the 17th.
Wednesday the 17th it gets released. And so those things are both going to be out in the wild.
Right. And yeah, you would think they would have given us more information because they both tie in to Apple Watch. At least on some level.
They both should. We don't know that they will. Well, you know that HealthKit does. We don't have any proof yet that HomeKit will.
No, they implied that it would through some home automation features.
Oh, like, I didn't catch anything on HomeKit during the.
I think there's a very fast reference to that, not directly, but when they're talking about third party apps for the Apple Watch.
All right, fair enough. So let's talk about. So we didn't get anything from HomeKit. We got very little on HealthKit. There was the health and fitness video,
and that was nice to see because it gave us at least a little taste of what's coming.
Yeah, like we're gonna, for instance, one of the things that iWatch does, that Apple Watch does, is it will keep a holistic look at all of your activities. And it does so in communication with the iPhone.
Right. And, on that, there's a new thing in the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus that I thought was really interesting. There's a barometric sensor. So it can get relative air pressure change to figure out your relative altitude change. So it knows when you're going up and down stairs. It can tell when you're climbing a hill or going back down, things like that.
Well, the iPhone 7 is going to be Santa Claus.
We can live in hope. Yeah.
Yeah. No. So, right. Naughty. It's going to know when we're. Anyway.
Yes.
Moving along.
Yeah. Anyhow, so with sensors like that being tied back to Apple Watch through your iPhone, there's a lot of data that can be gathered, which makes this holistic thing totally possible.
Fair enough. And as part of that holistic look, the Apple is monitoring three states: heavy exercise, actually heavy activity. They were actually very clear to separate that from heavy exercise. Basically, any time you're doing anything strenuous, the amount of time you're standing and the amount of time you're sitting down.
Yes.
And they will give you reminders if you want. Obviously, all of this stuff's optional.
Right. And the reminders for sitting down are clever. I guess there's a study that shows that if you stand for at least a minute once an hour, that's much better for your body than, well, I guess not standing at all. So it will give you a little reminder if you want to get up.
And that's something, do you remember me saying that I was hoping that what would become the Apple Watch would help me look differently at the way I live my life?
Yes, and this is exactly the sort of thing that would fit into that.
Precisely, yeah. And it'll monitor your caloric intake. Of course, I think you're going to have to input that data, probably through your iPhone.
Yes, someone, I believe it was Kelly Gaumont, said, wouldn't it be cool if when you use the Starbucks app to pay with your iPhone, that it knows what kind of drink you just ordered, and so it automatically adds those calories to your count for the day?
That would be pretty sweet.
That would be cool.
And project that out to all restaurants.
Yes. My guess is that's a feature that most restaurants wouldn't want to have. At least like fast food chains.
Probably not. So they're monitoring, they'll give you the reminders, they'll give you this holistic look at what you're doing. You can set goals for yourself. I can't wait to learn more about that. We really only got a surface look at it, but I can't wait to learn more about it. We also the thing that hit me over the head. The thing that hit me over the head, Jeff, was how thought out Apple Watches.
Yes, it very easily could have been a shiny glossy Pebble or a Galaxy Gear, heaven forbid. But it didn't come across like just another smartwatch.
No, it didn't. Apple's done some really innovative things. So, you know, I know I've written about it, and I think we've talked about it. Samsung's smartwatches are a joke. They're just an ugly, gross joke.
Right.
And they were released for all of the wrong reasons. They were developed for the wrong reasons. They were developed because Apple's doing it. And they were released before Apple, you know, just to have something out before Apple did. And the Galaxy Gear, the first one is just it's just an abomination. And the second one is slightly less of an abomination. And, you know, they're a joke. And then Google came along with Google Wear, which they showed at Google I.O. in June. Or the end of May, one of the two, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's right before WWDC. And Google Wear was like everything that everybody else has already been doing, but done correctly.
You know, which is good.
The app seemed to make a lot more sense. The information that they were displaying and the way you would get to that information, it all made a lot more sense than what anyone else is doing. And I'm including all the third party smartwatches and I'm including the Samsung abominations. It was, you know, the Google Wear platform that Google developed for smartwatches was conventional smartwatch thinking done correctly. But that's just it. It was conventional thinking.
And conventional is the key word there.
Yes. It is absolutely the key. It's absolutely the key word because what Apple showed us, Apple, you know, it's exactly what Apple did with the iPhone. You know, it's just this complete. You remember with the iPhone? It's like, oh my God, there's no keyboard on it. This thing is complete crap.
Yep, I totally remember people saying it was going to be a total fail because it didn't have a real keyboard.
Yeah, doesn't have a real keyboard. And then there's that moon-faced numbnut on a BlackBerry commercial. And it's got a physical keyboard because that's important to me.
Oh, I forgot about that.
God, that just puts me on tilt. Even thinking about it just puts me on massive tilt because that's important to me. It's the way it looks. Anyway, Apple rethought everything to do with interacting with the phone when it came to having a multi-touch, touch display, touch interface, touch display approach to having a device like this. You know, all these paradigms were reinvented from the ground up. Apple did the same thing with the iPad. Of course, that was obviously building on their success and information with the iPhone. But then they did it again with the smartwatch. They started from the ground up. They didn't think, you know, this is one of the things I said in the piece I wrote yesterday, is what became obvious watching the presentation was the mountain of no that was piling up, invisible, yet undeniable, behind Kevin Lynch, the vice president who was doing the demo for us. It's just, it was so obvious that Apple had said no to so many things developing the Apple Watch.
Which is good, because that saved us from having a Galaxy Gear.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, like, for instance, the Taptic Engine is what Apple calls it, which is a glorified name for their haptic feedback system. So they're calling it the Taptic Engine. And what the Taptic Engine does is it gives you physical responses that are intended to be used as alerts.
Yes, and it's not like feeling a vibration on your wrist, like if you strapped your iPhone to your wrist and got an alarm. Dave described it more like feeling someone tapping on your wrist with your finger.
Yeah, yeah. He was saying in particular, just so this was during the hands-on session at the Flint Center, he was saying very specifically that he expected it to, he just was assuming it would be like a, you know, just like what your iPhone does when your iPhone is on vibrate. And that he was very surprised when he realized it felt like someone tapping on his wrist. I mean, how the heck does Apple do that? How do they make you feel like someone's tapping on your wrist?
I don't know, but there are some things that Apple does where I sit back and think magic is the only answer. See? No, I have no idea how they can make that happen. But they clearly put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah.
And figured out how to make it work.
And that's just one example. The way the Taptic Engine works, it can be manipulated to produce a number of different, experiences, sensations, feelings, taps.
Yes, different vibrations. Types of taps. That's kind of cool. The demo they gave, or the example they gave of that, was using it in conjunction with your iPhone for turn-by-turn directions. So as you're walking along, your Apple Watch vibrates in a different way to let you know it's time to turn left or it's time to turn right.
Yes, that's so great. That's so great. And so
you don't even have to look at it. It's amazing.
You don't even have to look at it. I just so love that. And the display activates when you lift your arm to look at it. You know, obviously they're using a variety of motion sensing to know exactly how you're lifting your arm. The idea of being able to send someone your heartbeat, right? I mean, that's not necessarily going to change our lives or change the way we communicate, but I can think of a number of ways to communicate to someone that I am excited or calm or fearful or tense or anxious or whatever. Someone that I know, obviously, someone that knows me and is going to know what this means,
right?
By sending them your heartbeat. And that's just a fascinating thing. You can actually feel it on your wrist. You can see it and feel it. You can see it on the display and you can feel it on your wrist through the Taptic Engine.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And this notion of drawing things on the screen in order to send a message to someone.
Yeah, you can just scribble out little doodles and send them to someone.
Yeah. The question is, will the first such doodle sent in the wild be pornographic or not? That's the question.
No, there's no question there.
Well, no, it might be the second one.
Okay, first one will be a smiley face, and the second one will not.
Yeah, exactly. So Apple came up with a way of differentiating between taps and presses, you know, without having the screen, like, you know, physically be on a spring or something like that. I mean, there's all these things that Apple has come up with. So the way of browsing your apps is utterly new. Never seen anything like that. It's not the iPhone writ small.
Correct. It's the Apple Watch with its own interface.
Yeah, Apple designed the Apple Watch to be the Apple Watch.
Oh, on the interface thing, you use the little crown dial on the side, but it's right-handed. So if you're left-handed, it's completely in the wrong place. So they built a left-handed mode into the watch so you can turn it, rotate it 180 degrees so that the crown, the digital crown dial, is on the left side.
Yes, and of course it would be on the bottom left instead of the top left.
Which is okay, because it's on the left, and it will be the first time in my life I will have ever worn a watch that's actually designed for a left-handed person.
There you have it. So just all of these things, the way Apple has set up the display on this thing, and the way, like, the apps, in any individual app, you can have, you know, different sets of information, and you know, you can actually swipe through different sets of information within the app, even though the screen is already so small, and it looked like it worked.
It did.
On and on and on. This thing was designed to be the Apple Watch. It was not designed just to be a smartwatch. It wasn't designed to be a smartphone that's written small, like I said. It's not designed to be a calculator that's big. It's not designed to be... And it's not even... Even though it is an iPhone companion, it wasn't designed to be an iPhone companion. It was designed to be the Apple Watch, and part of being the Apple Watch is to be an iPhone companion. I don't know if I'm making any sense right now, but this is a visceral, this thing has brought out a visceral response in me.
It clearly has, and that's actually really cool, because I know how into watches you are. So for you to be this interested and this excited about a wrist top device is very telling, and I think that's very cool. And it gets me more excited about it too.
Yeah, I'm looking at my Zenith right now. I love my physical watch. This is a timepiece. This is an honest to goodness timepiece. This is a fine timepiece, actually, is what it would be called in horological circles. By the way, I noticed that they used timepiece, they used timekeeping, and they used horology, and they talked about I think they said timepiece culture or watch culture. I forget which one they said. But it was these were all code words, as it were, for the high-end watch market. And if you're not interested in the high-end watch market, that may not seem like a big deal to you. But you know, I've been thinking for a long time that the Apple Watch can have an effect on the Swiss watch market, and I'm more convinced of that than ever, which is, you know, kind of makes me a little bit sad. I'm not saying that Apple's going to destroy that market, but the thing about the Apple Watch is this: if you buy into it, you're going to wear it all the time.
And I guess we'll see. I am the litmus test for that.
I think I'm the litmus test for that, actually, because I'm a watch guy.
Well, I'm a don't wear a watch guy.
Right. What I meant was, so like watch people normally have, not normally, watch snobs have different watches for different things. Right.
Well, and see, Apple is addressing that to a degree by giving you easy to swap out bands.
Well, yeah, that's true. But that's not, I mean, like, so a watch person is going to have the watch they wear to work. They're going to have the watch they wear to dinner. They're going to have the watch they wear when they're doing their expensive sporting thing. High-end watches definitely cost money. I by only means, I'm not, I have one watch and I love it. My point, though, is that watch people tend to trade out their watches. If they have more than one watch, they're going to wear them at different times. And the thing about the Apple Watch is that if you buy into it, you're not going to wear it some of the time and then put on your Patek Philippe and wear it some of the time. You're probably going to wear the Apple Watch all the time or not at all. Because sure, yeah. especially if you care about the health and fitness stuff.
And for me, that's the kicker. The health and fitness stuff, that's the part that would make me wear it all the time.
Yeah.
One of the questions I have, which we don't have an answer to yet, can it track sleep patterns? And if so, well, then when are you going to charge the thing? Because right now they're saying it has a one-day battery life.
Yeah, so they said specifically that it was designed for day-to-day use to be charged at night.
Right, so that tells me most likely it doesn't do any sleep pattern tracking.
That is a good point, but they hired that sleep expert from Philips.
Right, so what's up with that?
I think it'll do... I don't know. It's a fantastic question, and we don't have the answer for it yet. I wish we'd thought to ask during the hands-on session. Maybe we can get Apple to tell us.
I hope so, because that, to me, that's a big thing. And if I'm adding in yet another device that I'm carrying around all the time, then is an Apple Watch worth the expense? Or should I just stick with a new iPhone and keep my Fitbit One and use that all the time?
Yeah, and I suspect you're going to end up wanting to wear the iWatch. Because you'll get one to test it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and, I suspect you're going to end up wanting to keep that. And I think that the information the iWatch is going to be giving us is going to be superior to what most of the standalone devices, if not all of the standalone devices, have given us. Now, we don't know that for a fact yet.
But I will be testing and comparing.
Yes, you will be testing. And it's my gut feeling, and Jeff will be actually finding out for us because that's how he rolls.
Yep.
And I don't know. It's interesting. I think Apple hit it out of the park with this thing. I can't wait to see where it goes. I can't wait to see what third-party developers do with it.
Yes, can't wait because third-party developers can write apps for this thing.
Yeah. They can use that. You know, when the Taptic engine gets given out to third-party developers. I mean, you know, there's going to be a Morse code app. You could send Morse code to someone. I know that there's going to be
adult entertainment stuff. Because of that Taptic feedback thing. Just you wait.
Fair enough.
Which means you don't want to try on anyone else's Apple Watch.
Yeah. Yeah. For the record, you can try on mine and it'll be safe.
Okay. And you'll be able to try on mine too.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know, sir. That's good to know. All right. Well, that's more or less Apple's media event in a nutshell.
I'm amazed we were able to pack as much into an hour as we did, Brian.
I could probably talk about the Apple Watch for another hour.
I bet you could. And and if that was our format, I would sit back and let you go.
But it's not. So
it's not. So what that means is I'm now going to say this. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening. We love that you're here.
Indeed, we do. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.